Hello and welcome to the Yogi Therapist Podcast. I'm your host, Shelby, a licensed mental health counselor and 200-hour certified yoga teacher living in Boston, Massachusetts. Through interviews with wellness professionals and discussions that infuse health, yoga, and psychology, we'll learn accessible ways to live an authentic, ethical, and non-toxic lifestyle. We are back with episode 17. How is that possible? 17 episodes. This is amazing. Today's guest is one of my dear friends and a yoga mentor, Emily Peterson. And this episode was actually recorded back in April. And Coco, calm down. Sorry, guys. Coco's calling me. Come here. Coco. Yeah, you say hi. All right. There's Coco's appearance. So we recorded this episode back in April, and it was actually the day that I started not feeling so great and then got sick. So that's how far back it is. Emily is a Reiki master teacher, a yin yoga teacher, and she's actually a 500-hour certified yoga teacher. She's also a Timbo trainer and facilitator, and she explains what that is in the episode. So while this episode has actually literally taken months for me to release it, it is one of definitely the most important interviews I've engaged in, and really just an incredible conversation. I am so grateful to Emily for her transparency, for her vulnerability, and for her honesty. It was really wonderful to connect with her on a deeper level. So a couple of things to note. If you want to practice yoga with her, she teaches yoga at Coolidge Yoga in the South End and Brookline. She's also got a bunch of really great workshops coming up. So she's got a Timbo session coming up on September 9th. She will be offering a Reiki 1 training October 4th, and then a Reiki 2 training this upcoming July. She's also offering a Yin Foundations training November 1st to the 4th, which I highly, highly recommend all of the above. I was fortunate to do my Yin Yoga training with Emily in November, and it has been absolutely transformative, and I learned so much. Speaking of which, I do have a bit of an announcement, and it's apropos that I am releasing this episode today. A week ago, I actually accepted to teach a candlelight yin class at Coolidge Yoga South End. So on Sunday nights from 6 to 7:30, beginning on August 11th, come do some yin yoga with me. We'll have some Palo Santo, some incense, some tea lights. We'll get really cozy. We're gonna work through the discomfort. We're gonna sit in it. We're just gonna experience our bodies, watch our thoughts. It's gonna be a super meditative and transformative experience, I hope, for you. So if you're down to try yin yoga, or if you want to try something new, or if you're like, wait a minute, what is yin yoga? First of all, listen to this episode. And then shoot me a DM, message me, whatever. So lots of good things coming up with Emily. And this episode, you'll get to know her a lot better. Again, I am so grateful for her transparency. We had one of the most beautiful conversations, and one of the main things that was actually just happened naturally was we talked a lot about mental health and her own personal experience with her own mental health struggles. It's definitely one of the most beautiful human conversations we've had, and I believe that it will really help other folks who may be struggling or have even had previous suicide attempts. And that is a trigger warning. I just want to let folks know that we do talk a bit about suicide. It is not anything in detail, but just, you know, FYI. She gets really real in this episode, and I'm again, so honored that I was able to hold space for her to feel safe to share that, and also that she felt safe to share that with me. I've been thinking a lot as I was listening back to the episode while I was editing it about how talking about mental health struggles is actually a really important way to reduce the shame around it. Even just simply admitting, yeah, I've struggled with depression, I've struggled with anxiety, that's a big deal. And I think that I hope that we can all continue to have conversations around this and not feel ashamed and not feel guilty and instead feel empowered. I really, really believe that Emily, as you'll hear, is such an empowered individual as she's really faced her struggles head on. She's conscious of them. She is aware of them. She works through them and has sought out appropriate help to do so. She's also beautifully turned her struggles into a way that she supports others with Timbo, as you'll hear about. I will say that if you or someone that you know is struggling with some mental health issues, anybody can go on to psychologytoday.com and type in their zip code and their health insurance, and they can find therapists, psychiatrists, and group therapy in their area. There's also some really great crisis hotlines. The National Suicide Prevention Line is 1-800-273-8255. Again, 1-800-273-8255. There is also a crisis text line, and if you're unable to talk by phone, you could text with someone who has been trained as a crisis phone counselor. That number is 741-741, and I've heard that there is a bit of a delay sometimes when you're texting with someone, so just be aware. But please know that if you're struggling with any kind of mental health issue, there is help and support out there. You don't have to do this by yourself. You don't have to be in this on your own. You are not alone in this. And while it feels like you may be in the worst possible moment of your life, maybe this is the worst that it gets. But you're going to get out of it. Everything is temporary. And I hope that these resources can be helpful for you. And I hope that this conversation can be helpful for you. Again, you know you're absolutely going to love this episode, and I'm so grateful to Emily. I think this was just a really incredible, powerful episode. I know that I say that every time. I just keep getting blown away by the incredible offerings that my guests share with us. So I hope you love the episode, and as always, please feel free to shoot me a message if you have any questions. Again, it's always so helpful for folks to share it, you know, with friends, or maybe this episode resonates with you, or you know someone who could really benefit from hearing everything that Emily has to offer. And so share that with them. And then maybe tag us on social media. I'm also, again, always open to feedback. I'm excited to connect with new people. So if you've got suggestions for future guests, you know, let me know. But I'm so excited to connect with you all. And really and truly, I can't thank you enough, because every message, every post, whatever it is, helps me keep feeling motivated to continue this, despite having so many things going on in my life, which are all really good things, but I am really busy and this does take up some time. So I really appreciate all of you, and go get cozy, comfy, or, you know, whatever it is. Maybe you're on your walk to work, maybe you're driving to work, maybe you're driving home, maybe you're going to the grocery store, whatever it is. Enjoy hanging out with Emily and I.
It out, whatever, but all the fire alarms went off this morning at like 6 a.m.
Oh my gosh.
So we didn't have a fire, but we were all kind of like, what the, you know.
You can swear.
yeah, what the fuck? Your mama. And so Mark was trying to figure out how to get them off. He was like doing the breaker and all that. Kira was downstairs, and I was like, do I go downstairs and see if she's okay? Like, talk to her. But Mama Kitties was like doing sprints up and down the length of the apartment. Oh. And then she'd run under the bed and come out and run into there. So I was just trying to like stop and stay by her.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you know, the alarms are like, fire.
Oh, I exit, hate that.
Fire. And I've never heard those. Like, I've never had an alarm where the voice is talking to
you.
Oh,
it's really weird.
Yeah. And it was about, I don't even know, it seemed like 20 minutes. I'm sure it was about five, but he had to call the electrician, and she said, well, you know, welcome to homeownership. It's spring. It could have been like a dust ball or a spider or something like that. So out of it is good. It's good that they A, work, and
yes,
we will not ever sleep through a fire alarm. Yep. And B, that it has shown us that we need protocol. So if this happens, like, we need strategically placed either chairs or whatever to get up to get the batteries out and things like that. So it was ultimately a good thing.
Oh gosh.
But this morning was pretty nuts.
Oh, such a good boot. Oh, and on your day off too. Like, how, what a thing to happen on your day off.
Yeah, that's all right.
Oh my goodness.
I did go back to sleep, surprisingly.
Oh, good job.
Yeah.
I feel like if I'm jolted out of bed, even if it's just like we have a, our neighbor has a baby and he's the cutest thing. He's probably about 8 or 9 months old now, maybe older. But he's, I think he's teething. And so he's waking up at like 3 o'clock in the morning, 1 o'clock in the morning, crying. And like I'm up and then I just can't really fall back asleep.
Oh gosh.
Sometimes I can, but yeah. Oh, she's so precious.
Look well, at as her. a chronic sleeper with problems, and I've been sleeping pretty well the last little bit.
Oh, you can do that. That's okay.
But I was like downloading in my dream last night.
Mm.
I'm having some very interesting dreams as of late.
Really?
And part of it was a trauma dream, but another part was like a lesson. It was like a teaching in my dream. And I was very aware that I was receiving kind of a teaching, although it's a very common, I mean, like what I'm about to say, it's not like, but it was very much like, Emily, you know, your anxiety is going to be mitigated by the fact that you're not alone in what you're worrying about.
Hmm.
It was like so interesting. And I was like, well, thank you.
Oh.
So I did, like, I did fall back asleep and had more of those sorts of things. But yeah, my dreams have been kind of wild lately. But it was so interesting because I was just like, oh, because I had so much anxiety last night about something else.
Yeah.
And then the message was like, well, no, this is a universal thing.
Yeah.
You can hold that into your awareness and that will help you get through this moment. I was like, thank you.
I need to hear that. Like, so it's really interesting that you had that dream because like that really resonates with me with what I shared with you about our living situation.
Yes.
I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Which is such a thing. Oh, that's so cool. I have such trouble like remembering what I've dreamed, even when I wake up. Like I'll hold it, you know, I'll like repeat it to myself 50 times. But usually when I get up in the mornings, I'm getting up, immediately going into the bathroom, brushing my teeth, getting dressed, going to the gym or going to the studio to work, study or going to work. You know, I don't like ease into my mornings ever really anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's why. But I do have a notebook next to my bed where I'm like, the intention is there to write things
down. Yeah.
Because I've had some like trippy dreams or like, I don't know if it's claircognizance or like something more like I feel something's going to happen or I like dream that it's going to happen and then it manifests. It's weird. It's not weird. It's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Great idea to write those down when you remember.
I need to. Mm-hmm. Maybe this will be like my hold myself accountable now. So I'm wondering if you could maybe share a little bit about you and your background. Oh my God. I love her purrs so much. This is everything. Hopefully you all can hear Mama Kitty purring because it's perfect. I'm so happy. I really need to just like rename this like interviews with pet owners and their pets because I've had dogs. I've had cats. It's so good.
Nice.
So if you wouldn't mind just sharing like a little bit about yourself, like where you are from, you know, maybe where you grew up. I know that I'm super excited to ask you about your bachelor's in applied psychology, but we can bookmark that. So, okay. Yeah.
I'm from Thousand Oaks, California. My mom, my parents were divorced when I was young. So my dad was always in Santa Barbara. So I spent a lot of time in Santa Barbara. She moved us, we moved with her to Michigan. I spent a couple of years in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to junior high and high school in Chicago.
Wow.
Went to college in Michigan. And then went back to Chicago and then moved to Mexico.
What?
And came here to Boston from Mexico.
Wow. You're like...
So that's kind of the...
Covering all the like quadrants.
Yeah.
That's so cool. What brought you to Mexico?
If you ask me like where I'm from, though, I'm definitely from the stars.
Yes. Yes. I love it. I love it so much.
We all are.
I love that. So what did you move to Mexico for?
Well, a friend of mine and I couldn't stand that W got elected.
Mm-hmm.
So we were like, we need to leave the country. At the time, we thought we were going to go to Prague or something and teach English. We really didn't have a big plan. And then that was right around the golf stuff. She speaks Spanish. I thought I sort of spoke Spanish. So we're like, why don't we just go to Mexico? So we literally packed up, and I had just been fired from the only job that I've ever been fired from and working at a restaurant and sort of sliding down a very slippery slope of drug abuse and things like that. So we were like, let's get out of here and let's just move to Mexico and teach English. So we did.
Cool. And how long were you in Mexico?
About 2 years.
Wow. That's so cool.
Yeah.
It's almost like, I mean, being fired. Now you look back and I presume it's like blessing in disguise kind of thing, since you were able to travel and...
Yeah, I mean, probably I would be sitting here if I was still in that job. I had a fiance back in that time, so that was like another lifetime ago.
Yeah.
But I definitely, that was a job working, managing group homes for primarily women with paranoid schizophrenia and borderline personality disorder. I had done my internship with the same organization with boys that were wards of the state. And yeah, I got fired. Well, they told me I got fired because I wasn't, in quotes, Trinity material, which was the name of the organization. I'm sure there were many reasons that I got fired. But one of them was, well, I wasn't really adhering, I don't think, to some of their ways of doing things. But I didn't really agree with the ways in which they were doing things. I thought that they were pretty detrimental to the people that they were, we were serving and stuff. So that was kind of actually the initial really time period in my life where I started using my voice in a way that was ultimately got me fired. Now, if you ask the organization why they fired me, they may have a different story, of course. But so, yeah, I needed to do that, and it was quite a learning experience working for the organization.
Yeah, and I know that, you know, folks who have those diagnoses, it can be I hesitate to say this because I don't want it to sound negative, but I know in my own experience of working with folks who may have been diagnosed with schizophrenia or may have a personality disorder, it can be really challenging and emotionally taxing for obviously the individual who has the diagnosis, but also for the caretakers or providers. It can be challenging, and not in a way that's like, oh, you know, like I hate this, but it's a lot of boundary setting and a lot of emotions and holding space and all the things. So I can imagine that that might have been a pretty challenging job. And I'm curious, with all of that going on, you know, how, and maybe I'm making it more than it is in my head, but I've never had the experience of working in a group home, but I have worked in inpatient settings and things like that. And it's definitely very intense. So I'm curious, with that all going on and managing all those individuals, like, how were you able to really like find the strength to find your voice and be more of an advocate of like, no, I'm going to do it this way because I disagree with you? That's a loaded question.
Yeah, I don't know. That was actually the same time that I started doing yoga and meditation, though, coincidentally. And just kind of back to what you said, it was a struggle, you know, to kind of work with in that setting. Working for the organization was way harder than actually working in the with the women, which I wasn't really prepared for. I have stories about that. But, you know, when I first got the job, we were the manager, my manager, we were driving out to the home, and she was kind of going through the client list. And she said, she was kind of talking about each of them. And then she said, you know, there's one woman who's the most probably symptomatic at this time. And she, her name is Lara, and she thinks that she's carrying Jesus's baby. And like my heart went into my gut, because when I was an inpatient in the hospital for my really long stint inpatient, I had a roommate named Lara who believed that she was carrying Jesus's baby. And I had loose contact with her because my best friend from the hospital, we continued to be best friends for a while.
Wow.
She knew her from growing up. So I was driving, we were driving out there and I was like, oh my goodness. I don't know how common this, you know, kind of idea is.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, we'll just wait. And then I, you know, she gave me kind of the, you know, binder of everyone. So I was looking through and I was like, oh my goodness, like this is the Laura that I know. And so I took my boss outside and I was like, I don't know really how to tell you this, but I was impatient with Laura when my first big long time inpatient stay.
Yeah.
And she just kind of looked at me, you know, she said, Emily, you either get into this field because of your own personal, like, mental health, exactly, or you know, so you know your family or something like that. And she's like, "It's really up to you." She's, "I don't think actually she's gonna recognize you in this moment," you know.
Yeah.
And so, sure enough, they came back from the day program, and I sat next to her on the couch, and we were watching Friends. And so she was talking about all the friends that were as her friends and all this, and she had no idea, but I had read her chart. Mm-hmm. And she had gone back in. She was living down in Florida doing quite well, but our mutual friend had committed suicide. So that was kind of when she went back into the thing, and I called my mom on the way home and I was like, "Mom, you're never going to guess who is now in my charge, you know." She's like, "Who?" I said, "Well, she's carrying Jesus's baby." She was like, "Laura?"
Oh my goodness.
And then she was just like, "Well, you know, I just can't believe how far you've come, you know." So that was kind of this whole thing. And then I was like, clearly I'm here right now to support her in this moment. Like, you know, it was just this really random but not universe thing of like, you know.
Yeah.
So that was a tangent.
No. Well, I actually, if you're comfortable, like, I would appreciate if you wouldn't mind speaking to, you know, how seeking help for yourself was useful. But I also recognize that that is very personal.
Yeah.
But you mentioned, you know, having the experience of being impatient, and I think you've shared with me that you've been in therapy.
Yeah.
I'm in therapy.
Yeah.
You know, I love it. My therapist is like my favorite. She's incredible. But yeah, like, cause you know, I think a lot of times there is a lot of stigma still with seeking help, and there is a lot of stigma around mental health, period. Mm-hmm. And I try, not only because I'm a therapist, but just because I'm a human, I really try to like destigmatize it. And also, like, seeking help or going into the hospital or going into a program is not anything to ever be ashamed of or embarrassed about. And I think people get caught up in that. So I don't know if you would mind speaking.
Taking medication.
Right? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. I mean, I don't know how much of the history you want, but I was hospitalized the first time in college in an eating disorder unit. And of course, the eating disorder was not the base issue, but it was a pretty big one in terms of my life at the time. And then I came home from school. I couldn't finish school at the time. Yeah. And then I went inpatient because I was just, I was super depressed and suicidal. I'd already tried to commit suicide once. And was supposed to be inpatient on this eating disorder unit for a month, was there for 3 months. Mm. And then did partials and things like that. Wasn't really working. And then I had a bigger suicide attempt where the doctors came to my parents and said, you know, she's not going to live. And I did, which was great. And so it wasn't until after that attempt that, and it was really honestly my relationship with my therapist at that time. I mean, eventually I could open up to include like my family. I think I had so much shame afterwards in terms of my family that was pretty difficult.
Yeah.
But my doctor at the time, who was still one of the most genius therapist out there, who was a MD but did therapy, you know, he said, "Emily, I can put up with the self-injury, the eating disorder, but if you try suicide again and you don't succeed, I can't work with you anymore." Mm-hmm. So literally that was the thing that kept me going, because I was like, as long as I'm alive, like, I definitely need this person.
Wow.
And then I was like, okay, well, we're clearly living, so how do we get going on this. Like, how do we start actually living? And then I became a little bit more on board with my own, like, seeking more help. And, you know, the last time I ever went into the hospital was the only time that I put myself in there. Mm-hmm. Was when I kind of threw my ex-fiance went and put his hand to my face. And I had a PTSD flashback, and I literally kind of picked him up and threw him against the elevator wall. Mm-hmm. And he was like, holy shit. And I was like, holy shit. And then I was like, clearly there's something happening. So I need to go, back in. But even in that moment, I was like, I need to, you know, go seek help.
Yeah.
Interestingly, I was talking about this the other day after, you know, I think you know that I am a trainer for a trauma-informed mind body program now. Mm-hmm. But a book we read and some of the stuff that I teach revolves around this idea that when we're thawing, you know, that the anger and the anger plus action comes when you're starting to thaw out, if you've been sort of chronically disassociated or any of those things. So now I know what that was all about.
Wow.
And I'm very grateful that it wasn't a press charges kind of situation, or that I didn't do something more.
Right.
But now I certainly understand why that happened a little bit better.
Yeah.
So then I kind of re-engaged again into my own healing. And then certainly when I started really turning into like drugs and going down a very slippery, like, drug addiction slope, I was like, Emily, like, you've worked so hard. Mm-hmm. You know, why are we, like, let's move out of the country. Let's get away from this, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm a huge fan of people seeking help. And the fact that we as humanity struggle, right, even we all struggle. And the fact that it's still stigmatized or something that people feel shameful about talking about is the very thing that perpetuates, you know, the suicide rates and all of these things and depression.
Right.
And if we all could just have a little more empathy for each other. Plus, I understand what it's like to feel so much shame that you're not even worthy of, like, reaching out to anyone or talking about your struggles. So,
I think that's so powerful, and I'm very, very grateful for you to share that and be so transparent. And it takes so much courage and bravery for people to be able to be like, yep, I need help. But I think that on some level, we have to get to sort of a rock bottom. Like, we have to get to the place where, like, it potentially can't get worse, you know, from there. And then I think that's what I've seen is when people are able to then reach out in some form to somebody to do something. It's interesting because I lead several different therapy groups at my job. And recently, you know, I have a group of like 10 students. And recently we've had a couple students that have expressed suicidality in the group. And I've been blown away by the students' reaction of support.
Mm-hmm.
And like, just... So anyway, I'm going off on a tangent, but it's like, I think that it's, the conversation is shifting and there is more awareness about mental health and, you know, suicidal ideation and all the things, but I think there's still a long way to go, I should say.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'm glad to hear that that has fostered support. I think that, you know, I used to, and not that it's not part of it for sure. I mean, I was, you know, I used to have a lot of diagnoses also. But, you know, when I think that, I mean, I was so chronically depressed and dealing with trauma and on all of those things, my trauma.
Which is often super misdiagnosed.
Absolutely.
Trauma.
Right. And didn't want to feel any pain anymore, right? Mm-hmm. So that was like a large part of it. I also just believed absolutely that I shouldn't be around people and that I was like causing them pain and discomfort and all of that. But I think later on I've realized, as you know, if you get committed to your healing and you get committed to working on these things, I mean, first of all, that the reaching out gets easier in terms of, or faster, I guess, like, the, you know, now if well, hopefully when I need help, you know, I can reach out faster. Mm-hmm. But also that I really have realized in the last several years is that that attempt on my life was sort of my ultimate form of controlling my own rejection. Like it was just so much more about disconnection, wanting to be connected to other people, having no effing idea how to do that. Mm-hmm. And so this way of like protecting other people from me, but also just being like, well, if, you know, if I don't exist, then no one can reject me or like hurt me either. So it's like so complicated.
Right. And there's this illusion that it's like protective.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So was this around, I'm sorry that I'm trying to put the pieces together a little bit. And this was, did some of this lead to as to why you went for a bachelor's in applied psychology?
Absolutely. And, because I decided when I went back to school, I had taken several years off.
Yeah.
That I needed to figure out how to like support other people. And because people had absolutely kept me alive and that I needed to give that back somehow. So that's when I went back and for applied psychology and then started managing those homes first.
Yeah. It feels a lot like, are you familiar with Viktor Frankl?
Oh yeah.
And like me. Oh yeah. I think we actually talked about your handwriting. Yeah. Finding meaning in suffering.
Right.
I was just talking about that with a student today. I worship his work.
Yeah.
Really amazing.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I don't know how much we'll get to it. But that is clearly still informs everything that I do. And I see one of my roles now as sort of a person that can, I mean, my big role here on the planet, I think, is to support somehow other people's healing. And though kind of I'm very comfortable like in the dark or in the shadow, so being a support for others as they kind of do their shadow work, I think is part of my role here. Whether that's just like carrying a little lantern or...
I have this cute image of like a mini teeny tiny you with like a little lantern. Well, you know, that is something that I really admire about you is that you consistently, in my experience of taking classes with you and doing the in training with you, you manage to hold space. And I've never been in one of your Timbo trainings, but, Timbo, like workshop. No, what is it?
That's a Timbo training.
Okay.
Yeah, group. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Group. But you have this really incredible ability to hold space for other people and to be a rock and an anchor, even when maybe there's things going on in your life. And I struggle with it sometimes where like, if I have things going on in my life, I might not be able to hold space at my job for a student. And so how do you do that? How did you figure out, you know, creating that boundary and creating that separateness and being so selfless to hold space for others if things are going on in your life?
Well, I think one, it's a practice, and I've only been able to increase the capacity to hold space for others by practicing being aware of my internal states and holding kind of space for myself. And that becomes a practice and a practice and a practice. Secondly, I ask for a lot of help, you know, I mean, I think that what I do necessarily isn't special. I think that there are forces at play, in my own opinion, that are providing me opportunities to kind of do that. And so often I'm just like, even like when I'm doing a Reiki session or something and I might be struggling with something earthly, I'll just say like, Archangel Raphael, you got this one. Like, hey, you know, take it over, please. But yeah, it's hard. And I think, you know, my dad dying 6 months ago actually forced me to step back a little bit. That was kind of the first time where it was like, I actually can't I can't actually, how can I do this? I actually can't. And I tried to do a couple of trainings and things, and I wouldn't say that they were hopefully successful at least, but they weren't disastrous, but I thought I was gonna like go crazy and lose it because I was like, I'm like crawling up the stairs. Okay, maybe this would be a good idea to like not. So I didn't do one-on-one sessions for a while, but that decision was born out of some, you know, really difficult of like, I actually can't right now. Mm-hmm. All I can do is show up to class, do my best. You know, I had a class, and being more honest and transparent about it, I think it helps. You know, I had taught a class, I don't know, a couple months ago, where I walked in, I was like hit by the effing tsunami of like grief. Don't know when it's going to come.
Yeah.
And I was like trying to shut it off, and I was trying to shut it off, and I was getting these horrible chest pains. So I like walked into the beginning of yin class, and I just like said with tears, honestly, you know, I said, I just got like hit by this wave of grief from my father. I've been trying to like shut off my tears, and I'm noticing that I have intense chest pain. Mm-hmm. So my two options at this point, because, you know, or my only option at this point is to just kind of start teaching and cry, because I don't really want to sit here with like chest pain, you know?
Yeah.
Of course, after I said that, and then again, I feel like the universe or whoever it is provides, you know, I don't know what I was saying in that class. I feel like that class was more of a download. I think half the people I never saw again. So for some people that's TMI and kind of like, wait, I'm coming to yoga and, or whatever that is. Mm-hmm. I can't project onto anyone, although the mind wants me to do that. One person at the end did come up and say, you know, thank you so much for saying that and being honest or whatever. I mean, unfortunately we have a community at Coolidge now that you can pretty much show up as yourself when needed.
Yeah.
But so my point is that I think I get a lot of help too. I've had to set more boundaries about that and limit what I do when I need to.
Mm-hmm.
And three, just be pretty honest. I mean, you weren't there, but this last teacher training with Laura, the first time I saw them was, I think, right after my dad died, before I went back from the service, before the service. And, you know, I mean, it's clear that I feel free about talking about these things, but I wasn't necessarily going to bring these things up the first time I meet these people in teacher training, but I had zero energy to filter.
Yeah.
And I just had to, I was like, they basically like heard for 5 minutes when I was just trying to say like who I was, like why I was in the room with them. And then I was just kind of like, holy shit. Like I just like told them like so much that I normally wouldn't, but I was like, I have no capacity to filter or bullshit.
Yeah.
So another kind of way in which my voice just was coming through. And again, it's kind of like I could be way turning people off, or people will resonate, or there's some way in between, but hopefully it at least will be helpful to someone either way. Like sometimes if we're like, we don't like something, that's good to know too. So, but it's a struggle because, I want to be of service, and I forget that I can't be of service if I'm not well and healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes that plays out by me coming home and being really annoying or short with my partner and stuff. So I have to watch that. And he's good at reminding me, you know, he'll be like, you have so much patience with people all day long. And then you come home and you're like snappy. And I'm like, oh, yes, you're totally right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. So when he says that, it's usually a call to either like take some breaths in the moment or stand back and like look at my schedule.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that the universe takes care of me in these sometimes of ways too, because I'll look at my schedule and I'll have like one client in a particular day, and then the mind will start to freak.
Mm-hmm.
And then it typically happens that I need the space, you know? So when you get into cahoots with the universe, it takes care of you in a way.
Yeah.
You
know? I totally agree. I'm not very into, what is her name? Gabby Bernstein. She's like, the universe has your back. I'm not a big fan of her, although a lot of people really love her work, but I really trust in the universe, and it's still something I'm working on, but I'm like, okay, like let go and let universe, you know, kind of mindset.
Right.
I also want to say, though, that, like, I'm trying not to cry, like, the whole time talking, but, like, I so appreciate how honest and transparent you always are, you know? And I'm not saying this to be like, no, I like it. Like, I like it. If other people hate it, screw them. But, like, I really value it because I, in my life, am just super transparent and probably TMI to many people. But I feel so much freer, or I am who I am, and I am going to probably be TMI and say things, maybe not on this podcast because I have to filter myself.
Yeah.
But it can be liberating and also, I think, sometimes anxiety provoking.
Yes.
But.
Well, I'm in the middle of writing a blog post right now, and the loose title, the working title of it is Being a Unicorn, Fear and Freedom, or the Fear and Freedom and Being a Unicorn, which I told a class last Sunday when I was teaching about identity and the spring and like wow. recreating and stuff like that. And I just told the class that I was a unicorn.
Amazing.
And then was like in a vulnerability moment that night or whatever. So I'm writing this post really about identity, but like the fear and freedom of being a unicorn, you know? And you're exactly right. It's kind of anxiety broken. But I also feel like, you know, my sister, when I was in my biggest struggle for like the street fight to stay alive, because once I made the decision to stay alive, that was when like the work began.
Yep.
And she gave me a card. And I think the person's name is Emile Zola. And the quote is, if you ask me what I came in this life to do, I came to live out loud. And I think that that's true. Like, what other choice do we ultimately have but being authentic and being open to vulnerability and to, like, lead to the best that we can with our heart? Because the alternative is just sort of living a life of quiet desperation, you know?
Yeah.
I can rip off Thoreau. But the other day, though, just back to what we were saying about the whole space holding, I was having a session with one of my teachers, and he was like, you know, Emily, you're an emissary of the light. You're a conduit of light. That's your job here. And I was like, oh, cool. Does that mean I don't have to work in trauma anymore? And he like didn't miss a beat. He was like, nope, you still have to work in trauma. You just have to continue to learn how to detach. Ooh. And these are, you know, his kind of his language and all this stuff. And he's like, nope, your job is to go light up Brookline. He's like, you have to bring the light and you have to go light up Brookline, but you still have to work in trauma. You know, I was like, arg. Like if he had been like, yes, your work in trauma is done. Yeah. I might have been like, see ya.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, you know, you mentioned earlier, I'm glad that you came back to the holding space piece. When you need that time to recharge and hold space for yourself, what does that look like? What are your self-care practices?
Yeah. Well, first I want to like credit my ability and that term to Timbo, to the founder, Sue Jones, and all of the training I've had and the support I've had. And so usually when I need to hold space for myself, the first thing I do is sort of reach out to that community and like be like, Mayday. And they'll hold space for me, or, you know, my community will hold space for me. But, now since I'm, you know, into like divination and things like that, you know, and I have this lovely tree outside, I spend a lot of time talking to the tree, meditating with the tree. I mean, I do meditate, and do some practices like that often, take a bath, cry, especially like with, you know, again, like referencing the, which it's just present, so we can again be only authentic and honest with my father's death. Just giving myself safe to sit down, be with Mama Kitties, be with Mark, read, which most of my reading is typically about, like right now anyway, like stuff, divination stuff or whatever. But just really to be able to connect to my relationship to myself and to the light. I've been doing a lot more soul meditations now to just sit down, ponder a question, just to keep trying to create a bigger relationship, an active relationship between like my soul voice, my soul, and my day-to-day life. So I take a lot of time actually being quiet. And then the other piece that I'm constantly reminded about my teachers, because my propensity is to kind of be in the shadow and to be kind of working. I mean, I'm so fortunate that my work life is part and parcel of who I am. And I can bring all of my jobs, I get to bring all of these things into them, which is very cool. So I have spaces to talk about like divination and Reiki and all of that. But my teachers are also like, Emily, like you have to go like dance, you have to be joyful. So, part of my self-care and creating space for myself is to like ecstatic dance or just run around doing things or being silly, or, it's equally important for me to self-care, in that way of just totally letting loose and being a goofball. 'Cause that's really what I am too. So, I dance a lot in front of Mark and make really weird faces, and he's just always like, "You're a nut." I'm like, "Thank you. You're a nut too. That's why we work together."
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you know Journey Dance? Have you heard of her?
Journey Dance?
Yeah. No. I can't remember her name, but I'll link to it in the show notes and I'll send you her information. My friend and I, a couple years ago at Maine Yoga Fest, did a class with her. And so this woman came in and she travels all over. I want to say she's based out of Las Vegas, but she's very much into empowering women and bringing women together to like freely dance and move their bodies and be sexy if they want and or just like silly and fun. And she plays like crazy music and has like these scarves, and like you're invited to like dance with a partner or not. And it was super trippy. It was just incredible and such like a liberating experience. And just to see everyone, I presume everyone, so in their body and feeling so free, it was like incredible, like euphoric.
It's amazing.
All the things.
Yeah. There are, I think, ecstatic dance places. Like if you look on Boston, they're around.
Oh, I need to go to one.
Yeah. That's one of the things I love about the Timbets, as we call each other, is that they love to dance. So even though we're like doing trauma work and stuff like that, we have like the best dance parties.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, when you work have to have some outlet that brings a bit of like playfulness and lightness, you know, to sort of balance out when you do have to be more serious and
I mean, it's intense. Also about like creating a bigger container for all of life, and all of life isn't all all suffering. And even when, you know, that was one of the biggest lessons that I took back from both my trips to Kenya and Haiti to work with women over there with the Timbo program, is that you go to work and then you have joy because you don't know. I mean, it's a lesson. You don't necessarily know what's coming in here. We just need to know that lesson better. Like the present is a gift and we don't know. I mean, you hear about it all the time of like XYZ car accident, whatever, shootings. You actually don't know if you're going to be around tomorrow. So the women that we encountered over there, it was an absolute lesson in like joy now. Mm. You know, there's time for like Ecclesiastes. There's time for all things. Under heaven or whatever. And one of them is a time to dance and a time to be joyful. You know, and even and that was such a big lesson. We went into the slums in Muthari for a group. And I remember so vividly because I was just like spiraling down into sorrow, looking at the conditions and, you know, the children and all of this. And I was like in tears. And the women who had gone through one of the Timbo programs over there had invited us into their homes. They had cooked chapati and like tea for us and everything. We were, you know, they were going to take us and show us around. And somebody who lives over there, who's a facilitator with us, I said to her, I was like, "Elizabeth, how do you do this?" And she just looked at me and she goes, "If you look at them, they are not crying right now." And I was like, "Okay, Emily, like, you're going to have to like pull yourself out of this, because she's absolutely right. They are having an amazing day, and you are going, you know what I mean? Like you have two choices here."
Right.
So, and then I had like one of the most joyous, absolutely joyous days of my life when I could get out of my own way and just see what was in front of me, which was like a absolute celebration of everything that was happening right in that moment.
Wow.
With kids, with dancing. We did a yoga class in the street. You know, they showed us the school, they showed us their homes, And it was like, it turned out to be one of the best days of my life. But I had to have somebody say to me, like, "Pull your shit together, because these women are not crying."
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I don't need to cry for them then in this moment. I need to like to be joyous with them. And I'm humbled and learned a giant lesson.
Yeah. I want to ask you more about that, but I also want to ask you, like, I feel like there's so much, I'm so excited that, like, you launched right into, like, all, yeah, like, the things. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, so I'm wondering, oh, you beautiful mama. Oh, I love her so much.
Thank you.
If you want to speak a little bit about Timbo.
Sure. Timbo stands for, it used to stand for trauma-informed mind-body. It now stands for Trauma Responsive Innovations for Mind Body.
Whoa, and yes, I like that. I know,
right? So fancy. And now we're called the Timbo Collective. Oh. And it's really at its root, the program in and of itself is a women's healing and empowerment program with curriculum. And it's really about combining mindfulness with all sorts of other modalities. Trauma sensitive yoga, guided meditation. There's a little bit of like IFSE type stuff in there, some CBT kind of stuff in there. But it's really about kind of learning in real time what the sensations in the body are and about the primal nervous system and whether the information it's giving us is real and true or real and untrue, which is such a big piece of being authentic and speaking vulnerably, right, is when the nervous system is like, you're about to die if you say this out loud, but it's actually not true. You're not really being chased by a lion, but the heart is beating and all those sensations are happening as if you are. So it's how to kind of identify that and renegotiate those times, and all the practices that we do also kind of then rewire the brain with the breath and the movement. And then it becomes super empowering because you're changing your relationship to yourself. And I know a former guest of yours, Laura, had said this about her teacher, but it is a foundational part of our program is to get comfortable feeling uncomfortable. Because if you're letting this nervous system run the show, then that was a dictant, is that a word, of a lot of thoughts, behaviors, and actions and speech, which were harmful and all of those things. But if I can change my relationship and actually drive the wedge or another Viktor Frankl between the stimulus and response, and I take breath and I do things there to understand that it's not current in this moment, and then I can start having new outcomes. And it's a program that I run at Coolidge, but it's been running, you know, there are over a thousand women a week receiving it in Haiti and Kenya and Tehran, all over Boston. And the focus of the organization is changing to some degree in that we have, we're working in like Taunton State Medical or Taunton State Hospital, different programs like Rosie's Place and Live Safe in Georgia, and the largest nonprofit for women going from homelessness to self-sufficiency in DC. So we have consultants there and trained facilitators that are staff. So now they use either pieces of the program or they do the yoga, like at Taunton, the women in the detox sectioned, you know, kind of court mandated detox, get some of the yoga, get some of the breathing, get some of the tools and starting the language. And then when they shift onto the unit, then they have groups and things like that. So there are people, I mean, and the, you know, of course the director of this who has brought it in is like a genius and a, you know, a visionary in terms of healthcare, but to get it all in kind of all stages and have a common language. And it's, you know, so our shift is kind of into agencies or talks with, you know, like BPS and different places like that, where we can develop, and this is not my area. I'm a trainer for the program. So maybe you should have Sue Jones on to talk about where it's going. But it's about all about compassionate organizations and how organizations can be inherently traumatic. Plus, if you're doing direct service and things like that, then you have compassion fatigue and secondary trauma and burnout and all of that. So how is it that the direct care staff can also have tools that they can use within their interactions and first and foremost for themselves, so that they can have self-compassion and not burn out as much and not be traumatized and have more agency and empowerment and presence and can hold space then when their nervous system isn't on chronic fight or flight or when they're not chronically stressed.
Right.
And then to kind of work upward in the organization. So And so that is kind of all in different stages and things like that. But
wow. I had no idea that it was like that there were so many other areas of focus with Timbo, like being at Taunton State. That's incredible and like so invaluable.
Yeah. Sue was just at a meeting with the city council.
Wow.
I mean, I don't know what's going to come up. I think she was just interviewed on something else. I haven't seen it yet. So I don't really want to talk out of my ass on this front, but it's widening in scope.
Wow.
There will be people like me who will be running the actual program for women to come and, you know, take the program in itself. It's malleable in that the pieces of it can be used in the beginning of staff meetings or like, you know, the city council. I was just talking to we did a workshop, Sue and the development director did a workshop last week, and one of the representatives from one of the city council's office was there, you know, and he was kind of talking about our experience as trainers. And one of the things I said about in terms of, you know, when you have your communication wires firing from the primitive system to the front of the system to the executive functioning, is that, I mean, no matter that most of us, all of us are traumatized to some degree, whether that's big T or not, we all have a nervous system that perceives a threat to rejection or disconnection as potentially a threat to one's survival. And, you know, I said to him that the thing with governance, right, is that the part of the brain where how we walk around in the world according to our ideals and how we want to be in the world is in large part in the front of the brain. So if you're hijacked by your amygdala, if you're hijacked by your fear system, even if you're like a president or a governor or a state rep, if you're walking around in a fear state, even if you want to do the best job you can representing your constituencies and making like choices based on equality and whatever it is that why you got there in the first place, if you don't have access to these parts of the brains, and I'm not a neuroscientist, asterisk, but it's going to be harder to do it. So getting everyone to kind of calm their systems down so that they can, you know, have more all of this ability to kind of stop and consider and pause and not be driven by sensations in the body or the unawareness of them, the lack of awareness that they're actually driving the bus or our conditioning or the ways in which we had to adapt as little ones to stay in our like family units and how that shows up in a day-to-day life is huge. So
yeah.
Let alone now what they know about intergenerational trauma and things like that and having tools to teach kids, but also tools for ourselves so that we don't keep passing along the changes in the brain.
Yeah. Oh, it's all so fascinating.
Yeah. And
like just so interesting.
I hope you come to a training sometime.
Oh, it's on my list.
Foundations totally. Is May 6th through 9th.
Oh my goodness. Oh. So with the Timbo group that you lead over that sustained period of time over several months, that I believe you host at Coolidge Yoga, is there a pre-screening for that? How do you figure out who would be appropriate? You know, because there are different, I don't know if I want to say stages, but stages of healing after trauma.
Sure.
So, you know, I'm just curious how you identify who might be a good fit, maybe not, or is there even not a pre-screening process?
There's really not. However, you know, since I'm at Coolidge, a lot of people come through Coolidge. I meet with them a lot beforehand and talk about the program. We always do an info session. So like this group, we did an information session. 12 women came, I think 6 signed up on the spot, where we show them the manual. We talk about the program, which it's very simple and it's very difficult because if you're asking someone to make a different response to a vulnerability, whatever that is, and to sit in excruciating sensation with a different outcome.
Yeah.
I mean, that's difficult until it's not difficult.
Or being
until
in the body.
Until it's less difficult.
When the body doesn't feel safe. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a vulnerability, right? If my vulnerability is like to be in my body at one point in time, if I stay in the program, I'm going to step into it. And then you will be met with unconditional positive regard and tools and love around how to do that and empathy. But So I see a lot of people before, and so I can talk to a lot of people. We have information on the website of like a what to expect document so people can read about it. It suggests, awesome. It's great that if somebody's doing it with in conjunction with a therapist, now that more therapists are knowing about it, therapists are steering their clients to group, which is unbelievably amazing as like a partnership because it is somatic based. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes people come into the program and they leave. Mm-hmm. It is definitely a program that you have to self-select into.
Right.
So sometimes it's just not someone's time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we, of course, welcome them back when they decide that it might be their time.
Mm-hmm. And you led, I think, one that was all genders. And how was that? You know, like you can't maybe share much, but
well, it was amazing. That experience, like, I can share that. It was amazing and it was interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have done the program one-on-one with men, and you know, it's different to a certain degree in terms of you know, our program is based in gender responsive programming of how women best learn and heal.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that men don't heal the same way. It just might be if it was traditionally like male responsive, I don't know what that would look like.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, maybe I dropped more science in and things like that. But you know, everyone is looking for a space to feel loved and welcome,
mm-hmm.
and to say things sometimes that they've never told anyone. They don't have anyone have to talk in Timbo, but we found in the all genders is that like all the genders were when it was their time, and some people never talk through the entire program, and that's fine too. To be able to say something and then to be able to kind of let down guards. I mean, it's such a disservice to those who identify as men,
mm-hmm.
in this culture that like vulnerability equals weakness.
Yeah.
So to have a space of like where you can be vulnerable and then again you're met with tools and a group holding space, it was great. And you could see, I mean, they were doing the program and they were getting stuff out of the program.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was working.
Yeah.
So we always have this dialogue about like, you know, calling it Tim Bro, like, you know, because it's also based in some universal principles and things like that. But it was fantastic. It was also very interesting to watch the dynamics.
Yeah.
And how many people of each kind of gender finished the program,
mm-hmm.
and things like that. So it was definitely interesting. And a huge learning because a lot of my trauma comes at the hands of men. So it was another opportunity, because we see things in this program as an opportunity, another opportunity to do more of my own healing,
yeah.
Because, and to hear other perspectives, mm-hmm. that you don't usually get to hear.
Mm-hmm.
So there was so much, I could probably talk about this forever, but mm-hmm. it was really interesting.
Yeah.
And I thought it totally amazing.
It's clearly such an incredible, thoughtful, intentional, informative, supportive, all the things program that is, you say the word again, invaluable to people. And
yeah,
what a gift. Like, I can't say that enough.
Yeah. And I think that one of the biggest gifts is that when you develop a sense of safety inside yourself,
yeah.
then things outside you change, or you at least right. can, I mean, we're always our first audience, right? So we work in populations often where the external circumstances aren't going to change. Like, they ran this program and did a training at MCI Framingham for women that were in for life.
Wow.
So their external circumstances are never going to change, mm-hmm. but they could change their internal sense of safety. And then that changes their empowerment and their quality of life. And that's mm-hmm. what it really did for me also, was because I was one of those who couldn't go fucking near the body.
Mm-hmm.
yeah. So to get into the body at all was like the first, like epic climb up the Mount Everest. But then when I could start to understand what the body was telling me and start to have more relationship to it and breathe and see some of those things and start to have a little more of a sense of safety in my mm-hmm. body, then I could start changing the way I was interacting with my partner, how I was teaching, you know, what I was doing out in the world. So that's one of the biggest keys, is just developing more of a relationship with this internal sense of like empowerment and safety and agency. Mm-hmm. And then that changes, you know, there's a social synapse, as I guess it's Luis Cozzolino says, that we're, or the butterfly effect or whatever you want to call it, right? The energetic space in between people, if I'm showing up a certain way, that is going to have a ripple effect. And again, maybe people will turn away. That's also possible, right? Mm-hmm. But if I'm showing up differently, and I was talking to about this with one of my teachers earlier today, in terms of just noticing the fear response. And when I'm in a space of fear, everything is about me, because it has to be. I have a system that's running that's like, there's where the lions are, or like, you're in danger right now, or, you know, we have to get out of here. That it's all about me. And so getting in into that system and calming it down, and then like the eyes are open. I mean, I couldn't, you know, when I was younger, I felt a very large pull sort of towards the divine. And then, you know, it's hard to, if you, right, if you can't eat, or if you don't have money to, like, you know, it's sometimes hard to, it's hard to do things sometimes when you're struggling day to day so much, right? And about survival. Mm-hmm. And so everything was just like, how do I put one foot in front of the other? And now that I've got like the grace of like goddess and whatever, that I'm out of that kind of state, although I went into it again in a different way after the death of my father. But it has back opened up a space where I can like look up, you know, or like walk down the street and actually hear the birds or see the flowers or, you know, commune with the trees or talk to the universe, you know, or talk to the light, or, you know, do divination things. Like, it's just allowed my younger parts to come back on and be like, this is awesome, right? We can go dance around again because we're not so like in chronic stress survival mode. Right. So coming back into authenticity through reestablishing safety is like such a huge piece.
Yeah. Every time you say something, I feel like I have to just like let there be this moment of silence to honor what you've said, because everything you've said is really prolific and incredible. And I'm not just saying that. Like, I'm like,
oh, that's funny, because thank you. Because every time I end a sentence like that, I'm like, what did you just say?
You know, it's like you and your like spirit guides and all the things like coming through. It's so cool.
So did that even make sense?
Oh, it all made sense. Totally. Totally. I feel like this could be potentially a nice segue into talking a little bit about yin yoga, you know, because my major takeaway from yin and the yin training that I did with you was that it really allows for the individual to develop tolerance to discomfort. By learning to sit with discomfort in the body, you can translate that really well off the mat. And when I teach my students at my job about it, that's like my biggest thing, because I don't know if I told you this. I teach a yoga class or a yoga group, a yoga as therapy group at my job. And
awesome.
I've done, actually several students have requested yin. So I'm like, oh, totally. Cause that's my jam. Mm-hmm. The slower and everything is more of what I'm comfortable with. But since it is a mental health group, I'm always bringing it back to like discomfort, like tolerate discomfort, you know? So sorry, that was tangenty. But I know that you know, you've shared before on another podcast, and, you know, you've shared in person as well, that when you first took a yin class, it was like, no, what? Like, what is happening? So I'm curious if you could share a bit about how you learned to really embrace it. And now, like, you teach it often and you lead trainings on, you know, creating other yin yoga teachers. So,
yeah. Thanks. I'm really glad you like it.
I'm obsessed. It's like, it makes so much sense. I didn't get, you know, like, I love Laura, so this is not anything against her, but like, vinyasa doesn't really fully resonate with me. And I had a hard time during teacher training, my 200-hour teacher training, because I just didn't vibe with it. And then yin training happened. And of course, like, I had like, you know, one day all of a sudden I had those like intense emotional release. The next day, I had horrible diarrhea. Sorry, everyone. Don't care. It happened. Had to sit out of course, our stomach, spleen day.
Yeah.
But, it so resonates with my soul. And yeah. I just, when I teach it, I'm sorry. Now I feel a little self-conscious that I'm telling you all this. I don't know. I love it. But I feel as soon as I, when I teach it, I'm just oh yeah, this is it. Yeah, this is it. And I know what I don't always know what I'm doing, but I feel the most comfortable and the most authentic. Uh-huh. And I love that what yin offers me when I take classes with my yin teachers, and I hope that my students can get the same. It's just so amazing. Yeah. And especially because I am, as you can see, my brain is 40,000 miles an hour all the time. And I usually need to talk in order to process, and I am a big communicator and a talker, but sitting and being quiet and sitting with discomfort in my body is a major lesson always that I keep coming back to. And
yeah.
Yep.
That's awesome.
So apparently this is now a podcast about me.
I love it.
So continue.
Well, Laura didn't create Vinyasa, so of course it wouldn't be anything bad about Laura just as much as I didn't create
right.
Yin.
Yes.
So if you don't like Yin,
very true.
Shoot the messenger. Yeah. So my Yin teacher, Sarah Powers, said at first, how you do yoga is how you do everything. So at first I was doing yoga as a competitive athlete and always getting hurt. And then I was teaching yoga as a competitive athlete. I was a volleyball player. I was a gymnast as a youngster.
Nice.
And then a volleyball player. So I was competitive with myself on the mat, mm-hmm. and I was getting hurt. And because when I first started teaching, I had zero body awareness because I still wasn't mm-hmm. safe in my body. And in fact, disassociating quite often when I was teaching, I was hurt. I was hurting myself. And so yeah. I was actually at home after I had kind of blown out my SI joint, and I had ordered Insight Yoga, which is Sarah's book. And I was laying in bed. I'd get up to teach and I would go lay in bed again. And I was reading her book and I was like, this sounds amazing. She's a Buddhist practitioner. I was a Buddhist practitioner. TCM, traditional Chinese medicine. I've gone to acupuncture. It was this is a match made in heaven. And then, as you know, I went to my first yin class and I was like, this sucks. Sucks.
Yeah.
And I was just pissed. Mm-hmm. I wanted to kill the instructor. Mm-hmm. She was reading a poem. And I was like, can you just be quiet? And then she'd stop reading the poem. I'd be like, can you please start talking?
Yeah.
But yeah. Afterwards, after Shavasana, when I got up and I have chronic back injuries and injuries from athletics, I felt so much better. And I was like, wait a minute, what just happened? Because that totally sucked, but I feel so much better. There is something here. So that started my course of learning, and went to her training and stuff like that, and deciding to teach it because just from the physiology perspective or the physiological perspective of what it's doing in the body and is a whole topic of discussion. Mm-hmm. But it's targeting tissues that store shit for us that we can't process. Mm-hmm. So it will release things and all of that, but it is an opportunity to move energy that's stuck and that needs to be moving to heal. Mm-hmm. And also the biggest draw for me, and I didn't know that at the beginning, now I know that was happening, but for me, it's a space to, even though it's difficult, that it's fascinating because you can go to the gym and, I can lift weights and things like that, which is important. In and of itself isn't necessarily, it's not a standalone practice per se. Mm-hmm. But you can do a bunch of bicep curls and then you might be sore a day later or 2 days later. And yin, you have the instant feedback loop. You've got mm-hmm. in real time the body's response to what you've been doing. Not only do you have it in the pose and that you can really dive into the changing nature of conditions and see the relationship and the dependency everything has on each other in terms of sensations and emotions and thoughts and behaviors and actions or mm-hmm. desired actions. And that when you come out of the pose and you hang out in that space for a minute or so, and you can actually feel yourself going from achy and bitter and vulnerable and fragile mm-hmm. to whatever it is, to whether you feel balanced or integrated or light or buoyant, or maybe you find yourself thinking about ice cream, that is a good indication that the body has just moved towards healing and transformation and resiliency. Mm-hmm. So it became clear to me that yin is such a practice on the mat where we can tune into our body's innate ability to heal. And then if we hold the space for ourselves through the fragility and vulnerability, we get to resiliency and strength, and it takes the courage. Mm-hmm. So we're building all of these muscles, and we're reinforcing those pathways in the brain and those ways of being. And she also says, how you do yoga is how you do everything, right? So if you're off the mat, I think I just said that, right? You can draw on the fact that, like, I breathe through a 3-minute dragon or a 5-minute dragon. There are things in my life that I cannot change. And if I start to change my relationship to sensation and emotional content and my mental constructs at the same time, mm-hmm. and or give myself permission to come out of the pose, if it's just not my day to sit in any of that, right? So if I'm one that, like, overrides pain and I have to do everything like I did for my teacher because I have huge coach issues, it gave me a space to be like, okay, today is not the day to push to my edge. Mm. Today I might use blocks or whatever, but it was noticing, and nothing can happen without awareness, noticing what am I feeling in this moment, changing the attitude, which we have, right? I think Tara Brach on a podcast a while back said that we've been going from being human beings to human doings. Mm. So we're so up in the head even more now. And we have this masculine energy of the doing, doing, striving, striving. And we need that. Mm-hmm. But we're losing, although it's resurging, right? The feminine energy and the receptivity and the being and the softening and the nurturing. And so how do we come into relationship with that? Minimally balancing the go, go, go nature of the day,
right?
But also just turning back to the breath, turning back into the body, feeling Mother Earth underneath you, then connecting in and then walking off the mat. And people usually have one of two responses. Either they're kind of an acubliss or like blissed out, or they hate you. So it's like, there's not a lot of in between, but you can practice it and you get used to it, and it just builds capacity in all of it. So I'm a huge, huge fan, and I still have to move, right? Yeah. I still do vinyasa practices. Mm-hmm. I still do all those things. Mm-hmm. But if getting on the mat, getting quiet, noticing inward, changing your relationship to all of that, understanding that either the next breath or in 5 minutes when you come out of the pose, or when the body starts integrating, because given the space and time, we will move towards healing all on our own. Mm-hmm. And then you feel that in real time. Where else? I mean, I'm sure there are lots of places, but name them. Like, you know what I mean? Like, where you actually get to tune in, and that's the instruction. And it takes time to get there, but where you actually feel yourself going from feeling fragile or achy or wanting to get rid of something to then feeling light or buoyant, or just being like, what am I going to have for dinner? Which means that whatever was there that was commanding your awareness has moved on enough that you're now thinking about dinner.
Yeah.
And then if you realize I'm thinking about dinner, oh, why? Because I'm not in quotes, pain or angst anymore. Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. And again, with chronic diseases of embodiment, like depression and eating disorders and chronic pain, it's important, super important to notice when we are not depressed or in pain or those types of things. We have to notice that to retrain ourselves, because it's not that it's not happening. This is what I've learned in my own process too. It's not that I was always depressed, I'm sure. It's just that I couldn't recognize it.
Right.
So we have these new reference points. We have new ways in which, like, aha, like, I didn't think I could endure that. And maybe I shouldn't have, but the next time I'm more aware about where my limit is, or I didn't think I could endure that, I did.
Yeah.
And now I have a little bit more confidence going into the second side. And maybe I leave the mat being like, oh, okay, when something happens and I don't have any control of it, like I don't have control over like a death, right? Mm-hmm. What am I going to do with my grief? Am I going to resist it? I'm trying, man. Right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to suffer more. Mm-hmm. So I think Margaret Cohen or Cullen says her definition of mindfulness is using one's inner life as a laboratory, something like implicitly designed to see which thoughts, behaviors, and actions lead to suffering and which do not. Wow. That is like the definition of a yin practice, little mini laboratory moments of like, when this happens, watching a behavior pattern, I might still do that, but actually, does it actually lead to my suffering and wellness and wholeness, or the awareness that I'm whole? That's the other thing I like about the resiliency piece of it, is because we are already whole.
Yeah.
We are whole.
Yeah.
We take all of these little detours away, both internal detours and then these conditioning and external life detours, but we are whole. We are the light. Mm-hmm. As above, so below. Mm-hmm. We are the light. And so getting a glimpse of that in real time, I think, is pretty amazing.
Mic drop. again, like, it's funny because I do these, you know, in between episodes on like, hi, beautiful mama. I do like quotes. You've given me like 40. I don't even know where I'm going to start. It's insane.
Awesome. Make sure that you tell me just in case I have this terrible fear that I'm going to quote somebody that I'm not attributing it to.
So. Oh, I'll let you know.
Okay.
You know, for me, I did this meditation training when I was in college. It was like a 10-week course, and we would just sit for periods. We would talk about meditation and learn about it, but then we would sit and meditate in silence. And I don't really remember if we were given any direction more than just like sit and kind of be present, watch your thoughts. And I had this, like, what I call an epiphany, where I had, it was probably like 8 weeks in, 9 weeks in, something. And I had this moment where just this phrase, everything is temporary, popped into my head. And for me, I hold that a lot in yin classes, or even like challenging vinyasa classes, if I go to one, which I do. Just reminding us that, like, you know, pain is temporary, happiness is temporary, like everything is temporary, you know, and it's okay. And I love that yin yoga really, to me, serves as a reminder for that. You know, like if I'm in dragon, which is, you know, it's like a variation on low lunge where you're holding and, you know, oh God, I'm so embarrassed to talk about this in front of you since like you're my teacher, but you know, the muscles relax and you're basically letting the bones hold you up, and it can be very intense. It's a very intense pose, which is actually in Twisting Dragon. I will never forget. I think it was on my right side. I experienced like a tremendous release of emotion and couldn't stop crying for like 40 minutes. And it was, you know, I let myself cry. But now I've gone on a tangent. I don't remember where I was going, but I fucking love yin. It's just so wonderful.
Everything is temporary.
Everything is temporary. It's my favorite. It's my next tattoo. Mm-hmm. I just haven't decided where.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. I come back to it all the time, and I try to also offer it to students. It's like, here, you know, maybe this will resonate with you.
Yeah. It's true. And it is also, there are some things that are tied and true,
mm-hmm.
like, mm-hmm. you know, innately there's goodness, and mm-hmm. again, that we are connected to the light mm-hmm. at all times, even if we don't know that, and, you know.
Yeah.
And that the soul moves through the world in the body, so how can we keep changing our relationship to our own body so that the soul can bloom and express itself.
See, again, that's beautiful. Yeah. And I think that's such a lovely, I don't know, just, you just said like soul blooming. I actually like, this is so cheesy maybe to say, but like, I felt like my heart almost like opened right as you said that. And it's really cool. Not that it was closed, but there was just a sensation, I guess, in my chest of like openness.
Yeah. That's cool. You can feel that openness.
So you've mentioned like you're really into all the divination stuff and the moon. And, you know, you mentioned like today is a new moon in Aries, yes. right? Mm-hmm. Would you feel comfortable maybe sharing just a little bit about that, or what you're really excited about, what you're learning, what you're into, whatever you want to talk about with it?
Yeah, I love the moon. I mean, I love the moon, again, kind of for many, many reasons. One, in relationship to this conversation, is of nice.
Showing my moon tattoo. My waning crescent.
Is that, you know, the soul also heals through the emotional body, and the moon is the emotional body, right? Mm. So it is a reflection of who we are and our soul and our emotions, and it's an opportunity to keep doing deep dive healing. So I love that. I love that it goes through a different stage and talk about temporary.
Yeah.
It's eternity. It's there. But mm-hmm. each day there's another phase or another stage. And if you track yourself across each day, you can really learn a lot about yourself and cycles mm-hmm. and also sort of, I don't know, it's helped me a lot with self-compassion mm-hmm. and things like that. But there's just so much out there. And yeah, so I do new moon kind of ceremonies and full moon ceremonies. Sometimes soon I'll do them publicly for those like-minded individuals out there who want to like ecstatically dance and yes. do some moony stuff. But yeah, so I do a lot of card pulling. Mm. I'm starting to do that with my clients now.
Wow.
And those are usually oracle decks. I'm decided I want to learn the tarot. That is like a daunting and much bigger task. But I can't remember your original question now.
Just whatever you're into, you know.
Yeah. It's the, and again, we need both energies, you mm-hmm. know, but it's how we walk through on a day to day basis where the sun is more about our kind of soul and our soul's work on this planet and our consciousness mm-hmm. and stuff like that. The moon is about like our body and moving through day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's beautiful and she's dark and she's mysterious and she's glorious and she has just such power. I mean, she controls the tides. Mm. And, you know, if I'm going to call the moon a she, of course. And so can we in tune into ourselves and how we're so much made of water, right? So you yeah. can't say that the moon doesn't have a super direct effect mm-hmm. On our day-to-day living. Mm-hmm. And so she's a large part of my life, and I'm feeling very grateful and nervous about bringing more of these things out into my life and into my teachings, because I've kept them sort of private.
Yeah.
Recently, but then I'm like, why?
Mm.
You know? Mm-hmm. Because even when I teach in it and yin, and I'm not an astrologer, although I've been studying it for a while, but I'm definitely not an astrologer. Mm-hmm. So I have no credentials in this whatsoever. But when I'm reading about it or whatever, you know, a lot of times, I mean, it is this way because it's nature, it's the natural world, it's the universe. So a lot of moon themes will go along hand to hand with what's happening in the mm-hmm. TCM cycle or what's happening in spring. You know, like what's happening in spring is like mm-hmm. a lot of what's happening in the new moon in Aries. And so when I'm teaching on something like I was in an identity and creating a new identity or coming into terms with the identity that you want, you know, I try to say like, you know, if I get this from the moon, whatever, but it's the theme that you either resonate or you don't resonate with. So where mm-hmm. it comes from, is that really, I mean, people can let it go if they want to. But, mm-hmm. And since I've been sort of studying her and meditating more with her and practicing more with her, I mean, there's just things that are changing in me. Mm. And that's exciting.
That is really exciting.
And it's, you know, I draw a lot of cards and it's just so grounding. You know, the card that I drew from the Feminine Divine Oracle deck that I have for this month, for the card for the month is all about, you know, the question is about like, what is my intention in working? So I sat down and wrote about that. And then the reminder that when we set out and work through our hearts and our love, then abundance will follow, mm-hmm. Which is a big thing because my conditioning or my kind of wiring at times in my life was of scarcity and fear around not having enough and things like that. Mm-hmm. So that is something that I have to watch and that shows up in sometimes my day-to-day life in various ways that aren't helpful to me or anyone around me. So drawing that card, it's exactly the right time that I need it again with other things that are happening. And then can I just kind of hold that into my awareness and be like, okay, I'm just going to keep steering my consciousness back to this, keep steering my consciousness back to the light, and to my heart as my compass, and we'll see where we go, you know. But operating from a fear space, again, in the kind of that space, is very incredible, very limiting.
Yeah.
Operating from a heart space is opening. Now I feel the pressure to say like a quotable sentence that's just not coming
out. No, I'm so sorry.
No, I'm getting you. And I think since I'm currently working on it, you know what my teacher also said, never teach about what you haven't worked out yet. So that's, I'm careful about in yin class. So maybe I'm doing that right now, is sort of talking about something that I haven't like fully formulated.
Maybe. That is interesting, because I don't know if I've ever thought about that, you know, when I'm like preaching something to my students. That's really important.
Yeah, that's definitely a guideline that I use in terms of, I mean, and sometimes I'll go in there and say, okay, I know that I'm doing this right now. Like when I get like fired up about something that happened or something, and I'll just be like, I know, I understand that I'm not fully formed on this yet. But for the most part, I absolutely try to do that, because it's not the class's space for me to work out my shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I feel like we could spend like 17,000 more hours talking, and this has been just beyond invaluable and even beyond what I expected. I, of course, was like, okay, preparing all these questions, but then I anytime I'm doing an interview, I'm always like, okay, so let me do my research, let me prepare my questions. But like, this is what I live for. Like the fact that we just completely covered so many different topics that maybe we didn't plan for, you know? I think this was such an incredible conversation. So I know that folks can find you at Coolidge Yoga, both in Brookline and South End.
Yes.
We didn't talk about your Reiki services, but I guess, you know, what services do you offer as an individual practitioner, and how can folks seek out those services?
Yeah, thank you for asking. I have my practice, although I do distance work also.
Oh, nice.
So I'm a Reiki master teacher. I've trained in other forms of energy work too, but just for the purposes of this, so I'm a Reiki master teacher, and occasionally lead trainings in Reiki also. So I do individual sessions in that. Like I said, I'm kind of pulling in a little bit more divination work into those now as I get more comfortable kind of melding my professional and private life. And, you know, yeah. So everything that I do is kind of about holding space. And so I do see a lot of people that, and my background is in trauma. So I do kind of, work a lot with, in those kind of spheres. So the sessions kind of end up morphing into a combo of like Timbo and Reiki. And things. So I do that. And then I do Timbo privately there also. So somebody can do the program with me privately, which is, helpful if you can't make a public group, if you're a guy at this point, and, or if you are fearful of groups, you know, we are born relationally. We live relationally. Everything happens. Trauma happens to us relationally. So it's in relationship that we can work this stuff out, which is why the group is so useful. And that sometimes people don't want to start in the group because that's just too much. So they can come to me privately, which is great. Sometimes I teach yin and meditation privately. And and then I teach at Coolidge and Brookline, one class in the South End, do Timbo trainings.
Amazing.
And workshops and things like that.
Yeah. And so you mentioned you have I think that this episode will probably launch in a few weeks. I don't know. I'll let you know the exact date, but do you have some trainings coming up? You mentioned there's a Timbo training.
We do. We have a foundations training, which takes you through the program and gives a lot of scientific material about how the program came into pass, you know, the science behind it, a lot of the sort of our own theories and things that we use. So it's the foundational training, but you do go through the program. And then can get tools. So if you're a therapist or somebody who wants to, you know, use pieces of the program, the facilitation to become a facilitator is a longer process, mm-hmm. but you can have things that you can do right after the foundations module. Awesome. So I have that coming up. And I'll be teaching a Reiki 2 training in July. You're lighting up.
Yeah, okay. I'm doing a Reiki 1 on Sunday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in Arlington.
Awesome. Well, I'll have a Reiki 2 in July. I was going to be like, that was good. If you're interested.
Yeah.
I have, I'll be past then, right? Oh, on May 18th, mm-hmm. I'm so excited to teach a workshop at Coolidge called Yin Yang and Mindfulness, the Complete Practice. Mm-hmm. So this is where we're going to put together mindfulness practices, yin, dynamic movement, and yoga nidra.
Oh, yeah.
So that's one of my favorite, like,
delicious.
Like my favorite thing to teach.
Oh, yeah. My goodness.
So that's coming up. And then I got a yin training, a Foundations of Yin training, May 31st through June 3rd.
Ah, so cool. Look at you doing thanks all the asking. Things. I love it. It's so awesome.
Thanks. I love my jobs. My job.
Yeah. It's clear. It's very clear. And you know what? I also appreciate that, like, you do the work, you know, like, you're not just like doing the job, you know, but like you practice what you preach. And you've done the work to be able to continue to hold such invaluable, compassionate, non-judgmental space for people. And that's so important. And I don't really think a lot of people are brave enough to do that, that work in fields like ours. You know, I think I shouldn't make a sweeping generalization, but it's intense.
Your podcast,
it's scary.
Sweep away.
Yeah. Sweep. So lastly, where, you know, can you tell folks, I'll link to your website and everything, but can you tell folks where they can find you on social media and the name of your website so they can find you?
Yes. My name of my website is emilypetersonwellness.com, and hopefully we'll have a overhaul soon. I think I really haven't paid attention to it for like 3 years. So my foray into like the things like divination and like really, trying to embody, being an emissary of the light, isn't necessarily represented there. On Instagram, I'm at EP Wellness, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big social media person. Although I
good,
know that
that's okay.
Like, yeah.
I'm not either.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
And then I think that, like, you know, another thing Sarah said was that, you know, if you don't train with anyone who stops training, like you're training with a teacher who stopped learning or training. And I think that's just so important, part and partial. I'm a like triple Gemini. So I have half, my attention span is half on anything. So I'm always like, ooh, something else. Ooh, shiny.
Yeah.
And though I think that's really true. And because life keeps reflecting, deeper dive healing things, like each situation that comes up, whether that's like an internal judgment or an external judgment or like a stressor or a thing, even again, like death or something like that, it's all a calling to do deeper soul work. So if I see it like that, then I'm just not ever going to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And B, like, there's just no separation. How are we separate? How are we separate beings? We're all one, we're all the same.
Mm-hmm.
We all want love and joy and things like that. And we all have pain.
Mm-hmm.
And we have all that machinery inside. And can I continue to see the circumstances again as a reflection of something that I can do better on or work in, which is also then where I can also find like the joy and the freedom and things like that. But there's no separation.
I love it. Do you, when you say triple Gemini, is that sun, moon, rising? Or
rising, and Mercury was in my first house when I was born. So Mercury rules Gemini, but she's sitting right there, my ascendant and my sun. So I'm just like a massive
I think I'm all Mercury too.
My moon is Scorpio, and that makes sense.
Oh. Yeah, I'm a sun and moon Gemini and a rising or Virgo rising. And I believe, I think it's Mercury in my first house, but I can't remember. Do you know your human design? I think I might have asked you this already.
I'm a generator.
Oh my God, me too. Yeah, I love it. Oh my gosh, that is so funny. Do you know what your, sorry, my hands are super sweaty. Do you know, I can't remember what it is, but there's like these numbers in your chart. I'm a 5-1 and it's like basically like my life's purpose is to self-actualize and just learn all I can about myself, which awesome. I'm so driven to do. Uh-huh. And as I say that, I'm like, that sounds selfish. It's not selfish. I'm just trying to be a good person so that I can be a good person for everyone else. But I'd be so curious what your number is. Like if you're...
I would love to know. I don't know, but we could figure that out.
Yep.
Off air. But, you know, it's not selfish, right? Because the soul incarnates also to find healing and peace. Mm-hmm. And the relationship to how we serve others can only happen if we have a source of peace and realize these things internally, and then we can support others in realizing them, right?
Yes.
You can't really teach about compassion if you don't have any for yourself and things like that. So that's really the biggest lesson, I think. But I will just say that, you know, since I'm just starting to learn the tarot, and the first thing you can do is like do your numerology and find out your like essence card and your personality card and then your complementary card. And I turn out to be double justice because I'm more than one, and then double justice and the high priestess.
Wow.
So, which totally makes sense because, you know, it's just like, it's just amazing that once you start to just go into this and you see them as like weather reports and again, reflections, not like, you know, attaching too much to anything.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, this explains so much
about
like, you know, the shadow of justice and like the light parts of me that are justice and then the whole high priestess thing. But
I'm the hermit.
Yeah, see?
Identify so hard with it.
Yeah, cool.
Especially because the wild unknown is the tarot deck that I use. And the image is I think it's a turtle, but I say it's a tortoise because I had two tortoises when I was little.
Aww.
So I identify hard with it, but yeah. Well, this is wonderful.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I don't know what to do with myself right now. I'm just like euphoric on cloud nine. I'm going to float through your skylight. It's just wonderful. Oh, so good. Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you're enjoying my podcast, please subscribe and post a review. It would make me so, so happy. I'd love to hear your thoughts, feelings, and suggestions for future topics and hosts, so feel free to contact me through social media or send an email over to theyogitherapist@gmail.com. I'm always open to your feedback, and I love connecting with you all. Until next time, namaste.